The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Well, as you might have heard yesterday, we're doing a series of reports this week to highlight the homeless crisis. On yesterday's show, we heard all about the Peter McVerry Trust and their Housing First programme, and we spoke to one of their remarkable tenants, Francesca, about how having the key to her own door has changed her life. Now, today we're focusing on the Alice Leahy Trust and what it means for those who are homeless who regularly drop into the centre. So I sat down with some of the men who are homeless to find out about their situations and ask them why they rely on the Trust.
12 years, I'm homeless. So I was very bad on drugs. I was very bad on heroin and cocaine. And I got clean 12 years ago. I got clean. Because of that, I wouldn't go around my family. I didn't want my family knowing that I was on drugs, and I wouldn't let them look at me the way I was. So I came homeless. And when I got clean, I went back to my family. And I was clean for 10 years. And my father got dementia and got really sick. So I was kind of looking after him. And the stress of that, I kind of relapsed. Well, not kind of, I did relapse. But I'm clean now, thank God. I still can't get a place in a house and around like that. But I wouldn't go back to my family. Don't even know I'm homeless. I don't know. It's pride, really.
You're clean?
Yeah.
So you're not on drugs. Mm. You're homeless, yeah. So sometimes you have to sleep rough.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the kind of accommodation that the council, if you rang the free phone number, might provide for you? Why is it not sometimes suitable for you?
A lot of the places are anti-gay. Like the young lads that are in the hostels have that gang mentality. Like they think they're still in prison. Like they're very aggressive. There is a lot of places in the city centre that are really good and you feel very safe in them. But there's places also that you don't feel safe at all. Like 2 weeks ago, my phone was robbed, my wallet was robbed, my watch was taken off my wrist.
So it's a bit of a lottery. If you get the right place, you're safe. If you are given the wrong place from your perspective by the council, then you're in danger.
Yeah, yeah. But now the place that I was robbed in was actually one of the safe places. You're taking your life into your own hands most nights.
Now, the weather is cold and it's going to get colder. When you sleep rough, where do you sleep? I mean, not precisely the location, but what kind of places do you sleep in?
Well, I wouldn't exactly sleep out. No, that's being honest with you. There's an internet cafe that I'd go to, and it's like €10 a night. And you can stay in there, you can fall asleep on the chair, sitting watching a comedian or watching a movie or something like that. And the guy that runs the internet cafe allows homeless people to go in, as long as they pay their fee, and he allows them to go in, have a sleep on the floor and stuff like that. And the soup runs and all come up to it. And the staff there are really nice. So, like, if you are stuck for money one night, the staff would say to you, look, pay us when you have it. They're really nice that way. And then I go into Starbucks at Stephen's Green. They're open 24 hours, so I wouldn't be out on the street, if you know what I mean. So,
now, you have a job, have you?
Yeah.
And still, you can't find a place?
Yeah, still can't find a place. Like, I'm a hairdresser. Like, I've a really good job, but at the moment, I'm only working part-time. I'm doing reception, and I'm not doing hairdressing at all, really, so it's okay. Mm.
But once you get back to hairdressing and you make a bit of a living, even then it might be a struggle to find a place at a price you can afford.
It's a struggle to find a place, yeah. Like, I have a deposit saved up, and I have the first month's rent saved up. But even trying to get a place, there's, when you're going to a... The last place I went to was 2 weeks ago, and there was 35 people at the place. 35. The landlord said to me, look, there's 35 people here looking for the same place. I was the force in the queue. Only two Irish people were there. Everyone, the rest of them were on nationals, so it was just very frustrating, to be honest.
And clearly you didn't get that place.
No, I didn't get it, no, I didn't get it.
Why do you come to Trust and Alice Leahy?
I used to come to Alice years ago when I was on really bad in drugs, like, and they always were really nice to me, very welcoming, and they always, like, looked after me with clothes wise and stuff. I never looked dirty and stuff like that. And you can always come here, have a wash, and they give you fresh clothes, and they're very friendly. Like, I get on great with the staff, like, and if anyone needs a haircut or anything that comes in, I'll always give them a haircut. And if you need help with any filling out any forms, I'm a bit Brian Dead now when it comes to filling in forms. Like, so the girls in the office, they will actually, you know, like last week I needed a medical card form filled out. And I said, Jeanette, can you give us a hand? Like, and she perfectly filled it out great for me.
Are you optimistic about your future?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say I'm not. Like, you know, that way, now that I'm clean off drugs, like, that was a bit hard, like, you know, but what can you do?
How long have you been sleeping rough for?
Nearly 4.5 years now at this stage, so it would be.
There are loads of hostels and places to sleep. Why do you never go to them?
Oh, I did go to them, but you can't go in there to something at 10:30 at night, you know, so unless you're out on the waiting list for over a certain amount of years, and they're out, the spots are already down, so I'd be well down before 10:30 at night.
So you want to put your head down and go to sleep much earlier than that? Than 10:30 at night.
Yeah, well, because I'd be up at like 4 or 5 in the morning. I do it the opposite way. That'd be the only main reason why.
Do you have a favourite place? Now, you needn't tell me where it is. Favourite place to sleep?
Yeah, no, I have a little spot up at Phoenix, so, which is not too bad, you know, which is away from everyone. Only the wildlife itself. So that's all I have to worry about is the possums and the badgers and the deer.
And how do you keep dry and warm?
Places like the Alice Leahy Trust and Brother Kevin's.
But on a very cold and wet night, it must be difficult.
Oh, well, it is difficult, but you just go, get on with it, you know, and as best you can to be ready for it. It's not as if, like, your home is for 10 minutes, you know what I'm saying? If your home is 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're ready for it.
So how did it happen that you're homeless? What happened to you?
Just, I fell out with my family, I fell out with all my friends, and lost my job, which I was working all my life up until this episode. So just one of them things that happened can happen to anybody. But I'm actually finding it a great experience because I don't have to worry about anyone, only myself. So can I say I'm being selfish, being homeless? I am.
That's a remarkable thing to say.
Yeah, well, it's the truth.
So do you see this continuing for the foreseeable future?
I think so. Definitely not. No, I don't need anybody because of places like this. Because I've no addictions and none of that.
Well, I was overseas for a number of years. I came back. I was working in construction. There was no fixed term contracts as such. So when the bad weather set in, yeah, you were essentially without work and you weren't paid. That went on for a while. Then I fell into, I'm not certain about getting paid. Then I signed on social welfare while also looking for work. Then it became a bit of a problem with that. So eventually I did become homeless. Then I kind of started drinking a bit too much.
Have you ever had to sleep rough?
I've slept rough on a number of occasions, like in the summer months. And sometimes if I couldn't afford backpackers at the weekend, sometimes they're 60 or 70 euros a night.
Do you ever see yourself getting back on your feet again?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Well, like, I'm ambitious enough, like, and I have plans, but gradually it takes its toll and the ambition slowly recedes and stuff like that, so it is tough going at times.
Why do you come to trust here with Alice Leahy?
The compassion and stuff like that, and it's anonymous, really. Like you said, you wouldn't know that I'm homeless, so there's no questions, there's no...
So, do you know where you'll sleep tonight, for instance?
Yeah, I'm booked into a backpackers tonight, with friends. But at the weekends, it's a bit tougher due to the increase in prices and stuff like that.
And you're competing then with the tourist for your bed?
Yeah, you are competing, and then there's a huge amount of people that are anonymous and hidden homeless as such. People would be quite taken aback by the age of people, the demographic of people that are basically keeping it to themselves.
How did it happen that you became homeless?
God's truth. In 19 months, 8 members of my family died. I used to gamble for fun, you know, like in interest. But it was always like, if I lost 20 euro, £20, I go, here, that's too much gone. I'm gone. I'm at the losing enough. I started to gamble out of control. Within 2-3 months, whilst we were saving for the deposit on our own place, me and my wife, breast cancer took her.
Basically, you started to gamble and the gambling got out of control.
Spiraled.
spoiled. I was borrowing off Jack to pay Paul. Like, as they say, if you drink, you'll only drink so much you'll fall down. Gambling, there's no stopping. It's a very lonely place. I didn't know it was of eviction, not to live. Like, at first, I always kept it. I believe you're homeless. No, me, I am not. No, I got a flat. I'm in the north side, I'm in the Bedside. I always perceived homelessness with the reason people end up taking stuff, as in taking drugs or turning to alcohol or whatever. Because what you see and what you go through is surreal. It's, you wouldn't believe. I still don't, and I'm 6 years at it.
So how do you cope? I mean, where do you sleep at night, and do you go to hostels or...
You name a hostel in Dublin that I haven't lived in, you wouldn't be able to. I was given this beautiful gift one day. I have no idea who the lady was. I noticed, we're up at the, you know, the soup runs. Yeah. I was up getting a tea and a sandwich. I goes, yeah, I was. And she goes, I don't want to offend you. I says, no, you're okay. She says, I'm very sorry to approach you, but I have a tent and I'm currently doing a declutter at home. Would you be interested in it? Now, I says, yeah, that'd be very kind of it. Then, you know, the tent she gave me was one you'd go, like, on a family holiday on down the country. Six people could sleep in it comfortably. There was two lights. There was, you know, the one that has windows in it. Absolutely fantastic. Went into that soup run every time. They come out twice a week. I went in every time they were out just to look for that lady.
To say thank you.
Now, I did thank her, but I wanted to hug her and say, like, it was the first bit of, is light the right word to use? You know, it was the first bit of, a little bit of hope, you know, a little bit of, it was my tent, my little home.
Do you still have that tent?
That tent was taken on me. Well, it was like 200 or 300 photographs. My rucksack, even my dirty clothes that I needed to be washed were taken. Everything was gone.
Are you in any way optimistic, Patrick, about your future?
No, not in any way. And the sad thing about that, I was always the eternal optimist. I have nobody now.
And that was Patrick, one of the people I met when I visited the drop-in centre run by the Alice Leahy Trust on Bride Road in Dublin. We'll continue with this report after the break.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Now, before the break, I was hearing the life experiences of some of those who are homeless and who avail of the Alice Leahy Trust. So, how long has the service been running? This is Alice herself.
Since 1975, Pat, which was set up in 1975, and in 1981 we moved here to Bride Road.
I bet you didn't think in 2019 you'd still be here doing what you're doing.
No, I certainly didn't. We thought when we were set up, give us 3 years and homelessness will be solved. We were very naive then. And I think of that now when I see people out there saying, well, we'll solve homelessness in 3 years' time, and why isn't this done and why isn't that done? The reality is what we see every day is homelessness is complex. It's not all about... Now, there is a housing problem. We all know that, a huge housing problem. And there are families and single people whose only need is a house. They just can't get the mortgage or they can't pay the rent. But homelessness is a much more complex problem, as you will see from visiting us here. And I think we are in danger of forgetting those people. And we think of them at Christmas time and you see them on ads and different things. But these people are around 365 days a year.
Now, you offer certain services here every day. It's a drop-in centre and you're open for a number of hours every day. But it strikes me that the thing they cherish most is human contact.
It is. And people are very surprised when they come in here because we work in a basement. And like all basements, you expect it to be dirty and scruffy. And people who even come in to give us donations, and I should say people are extremely generous to us, they're very taken aback because there's a lovely, welcoming atmosphere. We have music on. We have this time of the year, we have the carols. We always have candle in the fireplace, a sign of hope. And the main thing is that the people who come into us, they sit around the table, they have a cup of tea, it's about hospitality, we're not a food centre, and we get lovely fresh bread from Michael McCambridge. We often have homemade jam to put on it, and people sit around as you would at a kind of a gathering. And many of those people are people who don't chat at all. And some of the people who come into us come back to us because they know they're meeting a familiar face. And we're all on Christian name terms. We work. I have a great team of people working with me. We all multitask, but we all have this thing. We must treat everyone with dignity and respect, and we do that to the best of our ability.
Now, your background originally is nursing, of course. So there are nursing services that you offer as part of the package.
Yeah, Mary now, Mary who's with us, Mary is a nurse. She's been with us for years and years, and she's with us 3 days a week. And we have two nurses who come in voluntarily on the other 2 days. Now, we're all very mindful of the fact that the services of the state should be there meeting the needs of people. So if people are linked in with the services, we encourage them to use the services. But the reality, what you see here from a nursing point of view, now the feet of people coming in. You know, we hear this is a third world condition. The feet are absolutely appalling. And Mary will wash their feet, put cream on their feet, cut their toenails, nice new pair of socks and shoes. And it would do you good to see them going up the steps ready to meet the day. We also meet people. I mean, the other day we had a man in with terrible scabies, and people think that doesn't happen anymore. You have people who have difficulty accessing the services. You have people who get a prescription, they don't know how to use their medication. And I suppose the real problem, which wouldn't be confined just to nursing, is the isolation of people and the effect that isolation can have on people. And we're in great danger, I think, of medicalising exclusion and poverty, when in fact a smile or even somebody to say just pick that up after yourself, that's being human and working with people, and that's how we work here.
And your assistant Janet will fill in a form for someone who's applying for a state service or a medical guard.
And we would still meet people. And of course, filling in the forms, I mean, it's a real headache for people, even those of us who can read and write. But the complex questions people are being asked just to get a basic service, and some people still have issues around reading and writing, and their usual thing would be to say, oh, I haven't my glasses, can you help me with that? That is still the case. And then you have somebody maybe getting medication and they have a pocket full of medication, but nobody sat down with them and described the importance of taking the medication. And very often you see people who really, even though I'm not a doctor, would be inappropriate medication. And then neglected wounds. I mean, we had one man in last year, I think. He was from Eastern Europe, and he was sleeping on a mattress out in the park. And he went off someplace for a week, probably a week down the country, and came back, and a fox had been sleeping on it. So he presented with a terrible rash. Now, we didn't know what it was, but they're very good in James's. We hear an awful lot about hospitals, but James's is our nearest hospital, and very often we have to go up with somebody to make sure they don't just walk out and maybe explain their situation. And then you mightn't see them again until there's another problem in their life.
And what had he contracted from the fox?
They just didn't know. They didn't know what it was. I think they never came across it before.
But I've heard of people with trench foot. And that's something from the First World War.
Well, we see that regularly. The feet, I mean, if you can just imagine now this time of the year, you have the rugby lads out and all the people and the hurlers, the lot of them out there in their runners. And we always say to students, KPS school want to do something for us this Christmas. And I said two things. I remember going to a fee-paying school a number of years ago, and I don't know what they expected me to talk about, but I spoke about the shoes, the lot, and I said, you can do two things. Now, when your parents are, and we never ask people for money, and people are very good to us, but I said, you can do two things. When your mother is going shopping, it's usually the mother going out with shopping, and just ask them to put in a few bars, because there's a man who comes into us here, and he loves a bar of chocolate, dark chocolate, not the white stuff, when he's leaving. But I said, the other thing, you have brothers and sisters who are out there playing hockey, they're playing rugby, and their jeans are thrown away or whatever. Why don't you start a project in the school and get the students to recycle those things, and they can go be of use to people coming into us? Well, it happened once, Pat. If I had said, look, go out and ask your parents for 500 in a cheque that it'll do this, that and the other, we'd have got it. But we were asked because I think we have to educate people to the needs of people. A few nights ago, I was at a function. Students, they have analysts, a group of them who are doing a project over a number of years looking at homelessness and the different threads leading to homelessness. So anyway, I went along and there were six big agencies and they all had their PowerPoint and they were all talking about millions. So I said to them, now, how many of you read the paper today? There were over 100 people there. Not one person had read a paper. So I said, you all have your iPads. I said, you, when you're talking about homelessness, you have to look outside the box. And when you're talking about health, you have to look outside the box, because health isn't all about curing everyone. It's about caring for people. And it's very hard to get that message across.
Alice Lee, you're a marvel. Thank you very much.
And Pat, can I thank you on your walkabout today for dropping in here, because we never know who will come in on a given morning and we're always amazed at somebody who will turn up. So thank you for thinking of us down here in the basement, and to News Talk for keeping us out there, because we're not going away anytime soon by the looks of things.
Now, Damien McCarthy has just joined us. Now, what's your job?
I'm a guard stationed in Pier Street Garda Station. Over the last number of years, the station has had a very close link here with the Alice Leahy Trust in terms of what they do. And unfortunately, a lot of the homeless community reside around the Pier Street area. I've been liaising with Alice for a considerable period of time now, and the local superintendent and chief superintendent are anxious that that link remains strong and there's regular contact.
Now, some people might think that the homeless, the one thing when they see a guard, they turn the other way because they don't want to interface with the guard, the Síochána. That's not how you see it.
No, and even in Pier Street and Kevin Street and Store Street, a lot of guards in the city centre know a lot of the homeless community. From time to time, you probably have seen homeless people show up in various Garda stations in the city centre. Sometimes a homeless person may not have any contact with anyone, only a guard, and if that's only for a brief conversation or a chat. And I think that's a very important link, because when all is said and done, the homeless are a very important part of the community in the areas we serve.
Often you'll hear people saying, like, there's someone sleeping in the doorway of a well-known shop, or there's someone sleeping in an office building under whatever porch or shelter there's there. And they say, why don't the guards move them on? What is the guard attitude, both formally and informally, to that kind of rough sleeping?
I think it's a very difficult problem we have. I think every guard is always very conscious that when we are dealing with a member of the homeless community, particularly during winter, the evenings are dark, it's wet, it's cold, and when you don't have any roof over your head, it can be quite difficult to be in good form and in good humour. A lot of the time there is, what could you say, you're dealing with a difficult situation, but in the back of all our minds, we know that members of the homeless community find it extremely difficult to get from one end of the day to the next. Quite a large percentage are struggling with addiction, with alcohol and so forth, and it can be extremely difficult, I suppose, just to remain in good form and be positive.
Sometimes the encounters might be fractious, but for an ordinary guard on the beat or people like yourself, if you move a homeless person on, you might be putting them into a place of some danger. Whereas in a doorway, in full visibility, they may feel safe.
Exactly. I think it's shelter is hard to find for the homeless community in Dublin. But we're very conscious that we know what facilities and resources are available. We know where they are. We're grateful for the link with Alice, that we're not just moving on, we're advising and supporting. We know, for example, that Alice is opening hours here, what can be achieved by having a visit here. And sometimes it's just through a positive interaction. It might look we're moving on, but we could simply just be advising that this is a place to go for a cup of coffee, a chat with somebody else, perhaps a pair of shoes, and to feel welcome for just maybe 1 hour a day or 2 hours. That probably gets lots of homeless people through one end of the week to the next.
Damien McCarthy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jolene, it's an extraordinary coincidence that you should be here today on the day that I'm coming here to visit Alice Leahy and all the people in Trust, because we have a connection, don't we?
We do, yeah. 28 years ago, yesterday, my biological mother, Pauline Leonard, was buried in Glasnevin Cemetery after passing away on the streets at Blackhall Place with her companion, Danny Lyons. So I came in today with donations of clothes and shoes and hats and scarves for Alice. for the homeless.
How much did you know of your mother, Pauline?
Well, I found out when I was 16 that Pauline had passed away when I was 12. She had been on the streets most of her life. She had five children. Well, we all ended up in care and then we were all fostered and adopted. We all did very well, thankfully.
How did you learn more about your mother then?
When my parents told me about my past, my mother, Maureen, brought me to meet Alice Leahy. Alice was able to tell me about Pauline and about what type of person she was and, you know, similarities that we would have had. And Pauline apparently loved country and western music. She called me Jolene because she loved Dolly Parton. So I was able to find all this out, you know, which was brilliant.
And you got to hear your mum's voice.
Yeah, she gave me the tape of you and Alice.
When you began to piece it all together about how your mother had lived.
Yes.
How did it make you feel?
Very lucky. Very, very lucky. Like, the coincidence is Pauline gave birth to me in London and brought me home to Ireland when I was 2 weeks old. Then I was in Madonna House for a year and a half. Then Maureen and my mum and dad went into Madonna House. They picked me. And then not long after that, while they were waiting for everything to be organised, their daughter actually passed away. She was killed in a car accident. And the social workers rang them and said, look, you've had a tragedy. We understand if you don't want to take Jolene. And my mum said, no, we will be taking her. We just needed a little bit of time to get over the funeral and the arrangements, but we will be taking her. So I'm very lucky.
How old were you when your mother died?
I was 12 when she passed.
And now you are the age
I am,
that she was when she passed.
I'm just turning 40. I have a
and
daughter.
You were 12,
who's
12. And that's the boy. Your daughter is 12. The age you were
12,
at when your mum died. Did you ever ask yourself the what ifs, the what might have beens?
Things happen for a reason. You know, everyone in this life, their life is just the way it goes. I am so grateful and so happy that Alice Leahy was there for her because she made a difference to her. I've letters from Pauline that she had wrote to Alice Leahy saying how much she loved her and that she was thinking of her children. Like, that's lovely to have that. Even though I never met her, at least I have a piece of her, you know.
That in spite of her difficulties
and
sleeping where
children.
She was sleeping, sleeping rough, that she always thought about her children.
Oh, yeah, she did. She just wasn't capable of, she wasn't in a position where she was able to care for children, you know. We found out since that she was actually homeless from a very young age. She was actually, her parents died when she was 12 as well. And she was homeless from 16. So she would have been in an orphanage up until she was 16. And then in England, she would have been homeless from that point on. You know, so it's just
but
ironic.
When you were fostered and adopted, it broke a cycle.
Oh, yes.
And gave you a brilliant start.
Yes, definitely.
And that was Jolene speaking about her mother, Pauline Leonard, finishing our report. And you'll be able to hear more of our homeless series tomorrow morning. We'll be out on the streets with the Simon Outreach team. That's tomorrow.